The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter and also from the Harvard Health Letter. And the first article is going to be Vitamin B12. A little bit of this nutrient can have a big impact on health. Vitamin B12 is an essential nutrient for your body. It supports the health of nerve and blood cells and contributes to the production of DNA. Typically, an adult needs 2.4 micrograms of vitamin B12 a day, which can be obtained with just 3 ounces of cooked ground beef or 3 ounces of Atlantic salmon. Vitamin B12 is stored in the liver until it's needed by the body. Vitamin B12 is found naturally in animal products, including eggs, meat, poultry, fish, shellfish, milk, cheese, and yogurt. Foods such as nutritional yeast and breakfast cereal are sometimes fortified with vitamin B12. Despite the availability of vitamin B12 in some foods, it's not always easy for everyone to get adequate amounts of this essential nutrient. Older adults, as well as people with certain medical conditions and dietary restrictions, are at risk of vitamin B12 deficiency. There are two main causes of vitamin B12 deficiency. One is inadequate intake, and this is pretty rare. It tends to be limited to people who eat a vegetarian or vegan diet, which avoids animal products. It can be managed with consumption of fortified foods or with a dietary supplement. The other is insufficient absorption. You may be consuming what seems like enough vitamin B12 from food sources, but your body isn't taking it in properly. People over the age of 50 may be at increased risk of vitamin B12 deficiency because they don't have enough stomach acid to adequately absorb it. In this case, the increased concentration of vitamin B12 in a dietary supplement may help boost the amount absorbed. Several medical conditions can cause inadequate vitamin B12 absorption. These may include inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's disease, overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine, and an autoimmune condition that prevents B12 absorption called pernicious anemia. Another cause of B12 deficiency is bariatric surgery for weight loss, although the deficiency typically occurs several years after surgery. Drugs like metformin, used to treat diabetes, and drugs for acid reflux like Prilosec and Prevacid also can interfere with absorption. Because the nutrient is essential to many bodily functions, a vitamin B12 deficiency can cause a number of signs and symptoms. These include fatigue, muscle weakness, dizziness, shortness of breath, weight loss, numbness or tingling in the hands and feet, poor memory, and confusion. Your tongue may become inflamed and swollen. Another sign of vitamin B12 deficiency is low hemoglobin. It may take several years for symptoms to appear and worsen enough to be noticeable. That's because your body's vitamin B12 stores deplete gradually over time, if not taken in or absorbed. At its most severe, untreated B12 deficiency can cause neurologic problems, including persistent tingling or numbness in the hands and feet, or balance issues. For some people, these are the first noticeable symptoms of deficiency. Without enough vitamin B12 for healthy brain function, people may experience forgetfulness and mental confusion. A vitamin B12 deficiency can be diagnosed with a simple blood test. Testing is generally recommended only if you have risk factors or symptoms. If the cause of the vitamin B12 deficiency is not clear, your doctor might order an endoscopy, a procedure in which a tube with a camera is inserted down your esophagus to determine if damage to your stomach is causing the problem. Most multivitamins contain at least some vitamin B12. Other dietary supplements are available that contain vitamin B12 alone, or in combination with other vitamins and minerals. Vitamin B12 is considered safe, even in large doses. People with a severe deficiency or with nerve damage due to vitamin B12 are often treated with an injection. A less common option is a gel that's sprayed into the nose. Treatments are given until the vitamin B12 deficiency is resolved. Ongoing treatment may be needed if the problem causing the deficiency cannot be corrected. Vitamin B12 may be of particular importance to those with Parkinson's disease, a progressive nervous system disorder that affects movement. Low B12 levels may worsen some of the symptoms of the disease, especially the postural instability and the cognitive impairment, which can lead to falls and injury. In addition, Mayo Clinic researchers have found that lower vitamin B12 levels at Parkinson's disease diagnosis is associated with a greater risk of dementia in the future. A 2019 Mayo Clinic-led study proposed that supplementing vitamin B12 could be helpful to potentially improve motor and cognitive function. Mayo Clinic experts say the vitamin B12 levels should be checked in people with Parkinson's disease and supplemented if low. Now, once again in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, there's an article in the October 2021 issue entitled "Family Estrangement: When Loved Ones Aren't Speaking." Although not everyone is as public as Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, the royals are not the only family experiencing possible rift. More than one quarter of American adults have cut off contact with a family member, according to a recent large national survey. Family estrangement is a suspension of direct communication between relatives, often triggered by a conflict. In some families, a series of conflicts is followed by periods of avoidance and withdrawal. In others, an incident, potentially even seemingly unrelated to an underlying tension, can be the last straw. Not all estrangements are between parents and children. Sometimes communication breaks down between siblings or between extended relatives. Estrangements may occur for a variety of reasons. Adult children most commonly cut off their parents because of toxic behaviors like violence, abuse, or neglect, or feelings of being rejected. On the flip side, parents often cut ties because they object to a child's dating partner or spouse, stark differences in beliefs over subjects like politics, the pandemic, or vaccinations can be divisive and may drive a wedge between family members. When a child does break ties, no matter the reason, both parties often experience profound sadness, especially if grandchildren are involved. The ensuing grief can be as painful as that resulting from a death, and perhaps worse, as it is not publicly acknowledged. In some cases, the person being cut off may feel confused, angry, or shocked. Sometimes we're left with uncertainty if we're on the receiving end of estrangement, says Craig Strawchuk, Ph.D. LP, a clinical psychologist at Mayo Clinic. We may not know or never know fully why we are being cut off. Estranged parents may also fear their parenting skills will be judged, and the shame attached to this could lead to social isolation. However, there are also situations where breaking of ties can bring a sense of relief. People sometimes find it necessary and healthy to cut ties with a family member when the relationship involves harmful factors like abuse, whether physical or psychological, or unwanted manipulation. Still, the emotional toll of taking this step and maintaining distance is often difficult, and you may benefit from the support of a counselor or other mental health professional as you navigate this. If you determine that mending ties or maintaining some level of relationship is desired, sending cards on birthdays and holidays can be a good initial step. It lets the other person know that you still care, says Dr. Sawchuk, though he advises keeping these communications short and sweet. You have to watch out for over-engaging, trying to get the relationship back on track, or trying to find out exactly why you're being cut off. There are some other steps to prepare for a possible reconciliation. Examine the role you may have played in past hurts and take responsibility for your own behaviors. Show empathy. Don't try to persuade your family member to see things your way. Let go of the need to be right. Accept your family members as they are, and accept that a reconciliation may involve establishing boundaries. Forgive or work on letting go of resentment. The article also discusses dealing with strong feelings. To deal with emotions and understand how patterns of communication may be perceived as hurtful, consider working with a mental health professional, especially one with expertise in estrangement and interpersonal dynamics. A 2019 study found that counseling helped the majority of people who were estranged from family members. Participants reported that therapy enabled them to make sense of the relationship, maintain healthy boundaries, and articulate their needs. Joining a support group also can help you feel less alone. Finally, we're going to turn in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of October 2021 to a section called Second Opinion. Question. A few weeks ago, my wife suddenly couldn't remember where she was and kept forgetting after I told her. We went to the emergency room where the doctors told us it was something called transient global amnesia and it would go away in a few days. It did, but I'm still worried about her. Did she have a stroke? Watching a loved one lose their memory, even if only temporarily, can be a distressing experience. Serious conditions like a stroke or a seizure can cause memory loss, and you should always seek immediate medical attention if someone is experiencing these symptoms. You did the right thing in going to the emergency room so the doctors could rule out these conditions. People experiencing an episode of transient global amnesia, or TGA, can't form new memories and may not remember recent events. They typically can't remember where they are or how they got there. They also repeat the same question, how did we get here? Because they can't remember the answers they've just been given. But they still remember their identities and people they know well. Problems with speaking and muscle control or coordination are not usually present, which can differentiate an episode of TGA from something more serious like a stroke. There is no definitive answer about what causes TGA. People over the age of 50 and those with a history of migraine are probably at higher risk. Certain events like extreme positive or negative emotional stress, immersion in cold water or hot water, sexual intercourse, or intense physical activity are thought to be triggers. Since the cause is unclear, there's no real way to prevent an episode from occurring. TGA isn't considered harmful and goes away after a few hours. While it's possible that your wife may experience another episode of TGA, it's rare to have more than three or four in a lifetime. Question. I had burning and discharge that I thought was a vaginal yeast infection, so I treated it with an over-the-counter medication. But it's been more than a week and the symptoms haven't gone away. What else can I try? Answer. Not every vaginal irritation or discharge needs to be looked at by a healthcare provider. But since you've completed a course of anti-yeast medication with no improvement, you should get it checked out. Your provider can identify the cause of symptoms and recommend appropriate treatment. Yeast infections are a form of inflammation of the vagina. In younger women, yeast infections present with itching, irritation, and a thick, curd-like white discharge. In postmenopausal women, common symptoms include burning, irritation, and itching, while discharge may be absent. These infections are caused by various fungi, and most yeast infections respond to non-prescription treatment. But there are other forms of vaginitis that cause discomfort, which could explain why you didn't respond to treatment. One is bacterial vaginosis, which occurs when an overgrowth of certain types of bacteria changes your typical vaginal bacterial mix. This overgrowth typically produces a grayish-white, fishy-smelling discharge and is treated with an antibiotic. Trichomoniasis, another infection, is caused by a parasite transmitted through sexual intercourse. You may notice a greenish-yellow, frothy discharge. With trichomoniasis, both partners require antibiotic treatment. Reduced estrogen levels after menopause or ovary removal can cause thinning of the vaginal lining. This sometimes results in vaginal irritation, burning, dryness, painful sex, and urinary symptoms. These symptoms can often be treated with low doses of vaginal estrogen cream, tablets, or rings. Sometimes products like vaginal sprays, perfumed soaps, or new detergents can irritate sensitive vaginal tissues. You can test this by eliminating products one by one and seeing if the symptoms improve. If you do have a resistant or recurrent yeast infection, or if you have frequent vaginitis more than three times a year from any cause, your doctor may recommend long-term treatment options. Now we're going to turn to the Harvard Health Letter. This is also October 2021, and it's an article entitled, "Can Medication Help Us Combat Alzheimer's Disease?" Scientists are taking aim at plaques, proteins, and inflammation to prevent or slow progression. When the FDA approved the Alzheimer medication Aduhelm or aducanumab in June 2021, it set off a firestorm of criticism. Some doctors and their patients celebrated the decision, hailing the arrival of the first Alzheimer's treatment in almost 20 years. The treatment is designed to reduce beta amyloid in the brain, clumps or plaques of the amyloid beta protein, a hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. Other doctors felt the medication was rushed to market without enough evidence that the drug's removal of amyloid plaques reversed cognitive decline. They expressed concern about the drug's steep price tag, which can be $56,000 a year, its potential side effects of brain swelling and bleeding, and the frequent brain scans required for follow-up. Remarkably, the skeptics included a panel of experts convened to advise the FDA on whether to approve the drug. It's unusual for the FDA to approve a drug against the advice of the experts it consulted. Details of how aducanumab might be distributed, administered, and covered by insurance are still being hashed out, and the FDA wants a new 9-year trial to confirm that the drug works. Aducanumab is just one drug that potentially can treat Alzheimer's disease. Here are some others, including some being studied at Harvard. The first is monoclonal antibodies. Monoclonal antibodies for Alzheimer's, like aducanumab, are lab-made antibodies designed to stick to amyloid. This signals the immune system to remove the amyloid. There are two types of these drugs. One type targets soluble amyloid beta, protein fragments that haven't yet formed into plaques. Clinical trials of one, solanezumab, began in 2014. But in 2016, headlines noted the drug failed in people with dementia. We don't think it failed as much as we were too late in the disease process. So we quadrupled the dose and we're trying solanezumab in people aged 65 to 86 with amyloid but no dementia symptoms. We'll have results in 2023, says Dr. Risa Sperling, lead researcher and director of the Center for Alzheimer's Research and Treatment at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. The other type of monoclonal antibody targets insoluble amyloid, which has already formed plaques, and aducanumab is in this group. Dr. Sperling is on the team investigating another such drug, lecanemab, in people aged 55 to 80 with intermediate or high levels of amyloid plaques, but no symptoms of Alzheimer's. We're dosing people on the basis of how much amyloid we see on brain images, Dr. Sperling says. And the earlier we start, the more chance we may have to prevent the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. Scientists are still recruiting participants for this trial. Other examples of monoclonal antibodies include targeting insoluble amyloid beta, including donanemab and gantenerumab, both of which are now in clinical trials. The body produces amyloid beta by cutting it out from larger precursor proteins. Amyloid precursor proteins are like long pieces of rope. Amyloid beta is a small section in the middle of the rope. You have to cut the long rope twice to get the amyloid beta section out. The first cut is made by an enzyme called beta secretase, the second by gamma secretase, says researcher Rudolf Tanzi, who directs the Genetics and Aging Research Unit and co-directs the Henry and Allison McCants Center for Brain Health at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Experimental drugs like gamma and beta secretase inhibitors interfere with the cutting process and therefore reduce the amount of amyloid beta produced. Unfortunately, several were found to be unsafe, so Tanzi is trying a different approach. At MGH, we're making gamma secretase modulators that do not inhibit gamma secretase, but instead change where the second cut is made, another way of reducing the amount of amyloid beta produced. We're aiming at a clinical trial to assess safety over the coming year. Some experimental drugs target other aspects, preventing tau tangles. Abnormal tau proteins are another hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. They stick together and turn into fibrous tangles inside brain cells, killing the cells. Many researchers believe amyloid triggers the accumulation of tau. Once you hit a certain level of amyloid, we think there may be an explosion of tau tangles, which we call the catastrophe, Dr. Sperling says. Experimental medications and vaccine to keep tau from tangling are being studied around the world, though not in large trials. What are the keys to success? Will any of these experimental medications be the breakthrough treatment we've been waiting for? It's too early to tell. Experts are still debating whether the recently approved drug aducanumab can even be effective. What's becoming clear to many researchers is that we need to treat brain changes as early as possible in the Alzheimer's disease process, before there's a large buildup of plaques, tangles, and inflammation. The disease pathology begins silently, a decade or two before symptoms appear, like cholesterol and health and heart disease. We don't wait for someone to have a heart attack before we treat high cholesterol. We lower it earlier in life. That's what we have to do with Alzheimer's, Tansey says, and it may take a number of approaches to do the job. I think anti-amyloid drugs might help somewhat in very mild dementia, but we likely need combination therapy once people have significant symptoms, Dr. Sperling says. I feel positive we're going in the right direction. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I sure hope you enjoyed it.